Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
To Simpson, stutter step move, drives on Swanigan, lays it up and in. Top side Bogner, catch and shoot for three, got it. Mold Bogner with his 35th three ball of the year. Michigan's in front by five. From Bogner, now feeds him. He fires for three, and the teardrop falls.
You got to be kidding me, Mold Bogner. You're bringing that type of game here today. That's unbelievable.
Tosses to Bogner. He'll fire for another three and another make. Come on! Mold Bogner's got 17 first half points. Bogner, he'll take another three. Ring it up! Feeds Duncan Robinson. Turns for three. Got it! Right corner! As time expires, Duncan Robinson with barely a step to knock home the right corner three. Tosses to an open Wilson who dunks it. Left baseline jam for DJ Wilson's second field goal of the day. Michigan's back in front by 13. Simpson for three. Get in there. Got it! Michigan's going to win it by 12, Terry, over the 14th ranked team in the country.
Tobias to John Moore. Body control and a deuce. Don't look now, but we're all tied at 84. Horford chop side to Thomas. Launches, hits. And KCP fires, fills it. That's a triple, folks. He has a dozen. We are tied. Side to Brown. Short with a shot. Tapped up, though, and in by Smart. Kentavious top side. Three is through. Kentavious Caldwell Polk. Brown from the corner. Drills it. Making a 5-point put. Crowder boards it, and Boston wins it.
It's hard. I mean, you're playing a really good team, the number two team in the East, and you're right in the game the whole way. You know, you have a chance to win, so you got to be pretty happy with that, and you got to be pretty upset as a coach when you don't help your team more than I do. Shoot, triple team him, run everybody at him. I mean, bottom line is when they hit the fourth quarter, and this is, I don't mean any disrespect to any of their other players. He's playing so well right now that he's just a one-man team.
If Darren Williams wants to force it, he can probably get through waivers. I think it's likely he get the Cavs get the backup point guard they've been looking for and LeBron's been looking for all season.
The piece to make them a winner in the finals, I won't say that. However, I think this is a big deal to get a guy like this with experience who can run pick and rolls, who can take advantage of other small point guards, and just knows how to play. I think this is a big deal for the Cavs.
This is big in particular for the regular season. You got to find ways to limit the usage of Kyrie and LeBron. You're going to need somebody that can create with the second unit, somebody that can play pick and roll, somebody that can make the three that is a veteran, hungry to win a championship.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, the extravaganza returns on a Monday afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are and always will remain Toledo's sports leader. Really appreciate you spending the time. Bob France with you. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Frank is running the show, and we got a lot of things to talk about in the next 2 hours. Some of it's going to be of interest right off the top. Some of it we're going to have to dig a little bit, and I'm going to have to present some information that I think that will make it interesting to you as you get more into the details. That I will promise you, and that is coming up in the first hour. Guest-wise, we do have a couple of people we're going to talk to in the second hour. Bill Clark's going to join us, talk about a very important local event coming up to honor some athletes and give out some scholarships. Then at 4:35, we're going to talk Buckeye basketball. How about that? You just heard a little bit of highlight package there at the top of the show. The montage included Michigan's win over Purdue, the 14th ranked team in the country, both of our two favorite teams around here in the Big Ten. Of course, all of our favorite teams would include Michigan and Ohio State, as well as Toledo and BG. But in the Big Ten, both of the schools that we cover very closely, the Wolverines and the Buckeyes, had big wins over nationally ranked teams in the last 5 days, because it was Thursday, I believe it was, that Ohio State took down, shocked Maryland. So the bottom of the conference taking on the top of the conference. Michigan not at the bottom, but taking on a very highly rated 14th overall Purdue team. So that's kind of interesting. We'll talk to Paul Keels, voice of the Buckeyes, about those sorts of things. I want to start, though, with just a few notes on a few stories that are kind of national prominence and interest to us no matter where we are. If we're in Toledo, Ohio, or Los Angeles, California. And then I want to get into something a little bit more obscure and get your thoughts on from a youth sports perspective and from a societal norms perspective, if that makes any sense. You just heard a little bit of the montage there about Jalen Rose from Jalen Rose talking about the Cavaliers and Darren Williams, Brian Windhorst as well, Chauncey Billups, all talking about the possibility of Darren Williams coming to the Cavaliers. And it looks like that's all but a done deal. Darren Williams is, of course, a three-time NBA All-Star, who his career, his prime, is certainly behind him, but he's got enough left in the tank, it is believed, to really, really help benefit this Cavaliers unit or team with the second unit. And that's just one of two former Dallas Mavericks that are reportedly on their way to Cleveland. The other one, of course, and perhaps to, a bigger deal, and that is that Andrew Bogut, the former Dallas Maverick, because he was traded to the 76ers in the deal with involving Nerlens Noel just before the deadline last week, is not going to be kept by the 76ers. They're about to buy him out by the March 1st deadline for that, which, of course, is Wednesday. And when they do, he is reportedly very interested in signing with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, much more importantly for the Cavaliers than him being a former Maverick, as is Darren Williams, is that he is a former Warrior, who, of course, was with the Warriors when the Cavaliers played them in back-to-back finals. It's a big, big deal to have a guy like Andrew Bogut, who is a big, big man and a big, big shot-blocking presence in the middle of your defense, which the Cavaliers were lacking. But also, he's a very smart guy who knows everything about the Warriors inside and out, their offense, their defense, their philosophy, Steve Kerr's everything. Andrew Bogut will be able to bring to the team that is the defending NBA champions. Those two moves alone could upset the balance of power in the National Basketball Association. I think it's fair to say, and Jim Kushlin, welcome to the show. You can tell me if you agree or disagree. I think it's fair to say that the acquisitions of both Williams to address the backup point guard, which is so crucial for this team, and Bogut to play the center position and to be that rim protector, that shot blocker to be used as necessary, something that they just didn't have. And especially given Bogut's history and knowledge of the Warriors and the fact that he'll play with a chip on his shoulder. He didn't like being run out of town when they acquired Kevin Durant. That the moves to acquire both of those guys without costing themselves anything, in addition to the addition of Kyle Korver, who was acquired in a trade a few days before the deadline, that those three pieces added to last year's defending world champions have shifted the balance of power and probably made the Cavaliers the favorite instead of the high-flying Durant, Curry, Thompson, and Draymond Green Warriors. Would you think that the Cavaliers move to the favorites role, Kush?
I could definitely agree with something like that. I'll even take the whole thing one step farther for a tip of the cap to David Griffin and how he's pulling all this off. Because as we know, Bob, the Cavs have no real assets to speak of. They have no space, of course, for caps in anything, as we've documented many
million dollars over the salary cap already.
Exactly. So let me also spin it to you this way. If these two go down, or and the Darren Williams one will, in fact, just thumbing through a little article saying, actually, he may actually be able to play tonight after all. That still feels like more when we get to game time if he's going to be available or not. But assuming
Did he sign? Is he officially signed? I didn't see the official announcement of a signature.
I
don't know how he's playing if he hasn't actually officially signed.
Right, yeah, here it is. He has yet to officially sign his contract, take the physical, but if all that's done in time, he may be available. He may not for tonight.
Yeah, probably not. I can't imagine they'd rush him out there that fast.
Exactly. I'm thinking no as well, but how's
without even a practice.
Good point. But think of it this way. Let's flash back to that crazy October 25th. Remember that was game one of the World Series, but it was also Cavs ring night at the same time in the same place. Think of what that roster was like at the beginning of the season on that date. And now we're about to be here, and assuming the Bogut thing goes down, that means between October 25th and now, they've swapped out four guys on the periphery of this roster. Out is Mike Dunleavy. Birdman, who's probably done for his career.
Right.
Mo Williams, who's basically been retired, though he never officially announced it such. That's why his contract kept getting traded. And then because with Darren Williams, the roster is at 15 again. So if they're going to bring in Bogut, they're going to have to cut somebody. I'm thinking it'll be somebody like Jordan McRae. So Dunleavy, Mo Williams, Birdman, and probably Jordan McRae out. And in are Darren Williams, Kyle Korver, and Andrew Bogut. All with no cap space, luxury tax hell, and no assets like draft picks to speak of. That's amazing.
That's some pretty remarkable work there. No doubt about it by the Cavaliers GM and front office and whoever is assisting Mr. Griffin, because that is some serious, serious roster shuffling and improving.
Yeah.
By the way,
all of
Korver
those
is far better
over the first four names. Yeah,
Korver is far better than Dunleavy to play the same role. Obviously, Darren Williams is better than anything they had a backup point guard. No question about that. Bogut is just he's an answer to a question that didn't exist, really. You know, I mean, because nobody really talked about needing a new center other than, boy, it'd be nice to have a shot blocking big man there to protect.
Right.
And then bang, there he is. So he's the answer to a question really that nobody really or a problem that really nobody ever identified. It would have been nice, kind of like a luxury type thing. There he is, and I don't remember what else you just threw in there, but it was all very, very good and very, very impressive. So I think it does. I think the additions of Williams and Bogut, if and when that gets done, and according to, like I said, multiple reports, Bogut plans to sign with the Cavs as soon as the Sixers buy him out.
And they have 48 more hours or something to do eligible for the playoffs.
March 1st to do it. Right.
Right.
Exactly. And I don't know what time of day March 1st, like trade deadline day, is it at noon or 3 o'clock?
Right, I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They're going to buy him out on what's left of his $11 million salary this season, and then bang, here he comes. And he's going to go and join the Cavaliers along with Darren Williams, and they're going to be not only the reinvigorated beasts of the East, they're probably going to be considered, I would consider, to be the favorite in the NBA championship, or in the NBA finals, is what I would say. The favorite to repeat, because this offsets so many of the problems that they had that really, really were going to be, let me rephrase, that's the wrong way to say it. It doesn't offset the problems they have. It offsets the gains that the Warriors made. How about that? Cavaliers lost to the Warriors 2 years ago. They eked by them coming back from a 3-1 deficit in unbelievable fashion last year. Warriors are still a very good team who got way, way better when Kevin Durant joined them. And the Cavaliers didn't get any better, so you just by simple, you know, mathematics and common sense, if your opponent that you are neck and neck with gets better and you don't get better, then you have by default gotten worse. And so the Cavaliers now have taken that and said, we just got better. Different. Because we didn't need to sign a Kevin Durant. We didn't need a former MVP and an 8-time All-Star and a 4-time scoring champion or whatever it is Durant is.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't need that. We just needed these pieces to finish our puzzle. And when J.R. Smith comes back healthy and Kevin Love comes back healthy, I think it is the best team in the NBA. And I think it probably will be the favorite in Vegas. Not that Vegas means much, but it's just how we kind of talk about things. They would be the favorite to defend their crown.
And that'll be interesting going forward, especially in the against the Warriors side of things. There's no question there. Obviously, not enough happened in the Eastern Conference over the course of the deadline. Like the Celtics didn't do anything, for example. Oh, and by the way, we have here in the in our part of the studio, Bob, we have the TV machine on ESPN as we usually do. Just saw a crawl. Kyle Lowry's going to miss the rest of the regular season for the Raptors. He just had some wrist surgery today.
Wow.
So
and
that's going to mess them and their seating up as well.
Yeah,
and they're right
that
now
can
number four.
People. That can impact some people all the way up and down those
sure.
four, five, six, seven, eight, you know, spots in the Eastern Conference. I don't think it really changes much for the Cavaliers because I don't think they were the biggest threat anyway. I think that clearly remains Boston, but excuse me.
No, and you're right. It does still remain Boston, but that's yet another wrinkle to one of the other teams, at least in the East, that's attempting, in theory, to challenge the Cavs in a possible
right.
East Finals scenario. It just keeps making things like that, combined with the Celtics not doing anything, as we discussed last week on deadline day. Yeah, and the Cavs right now still have a three-game lead, and that's considering they lost because LeBron had strep, didn't play Saturday, and the Celtics eventually won that game last night against the Pistons. It's still a three-game separation just with Cleveland. Cleveland and Boston.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, a lot of Cavaliers fans losing their minds on social media. Oh my God, you know, we fell to 0-4 without LeBron. What are we going to do if something ever happens? We can't win without him. You know, and denigrating Kyrie. See, Kyrie can't carry this team. Well, Kyrie was being asked to carry not only a LeBron-less team, but then also a Kevin Love-less team and a J.R. Smith-less team. And then, oh, by the way, Kyle Korver got hurt too. I mean, for crying out loud, people. Stop. Relax. Quit panicking. This is a team that is banged up right now, that's going through a little bit of a rough patch because of that. But when everybody is healthy, I think they are the favorites in the NBA.
I agree.
One of the other huge stories of the day is from the baseball side of things, and it has nothing to do with the Tigers that we like to bring you great coverage of here on the ticket, nor the Indians, the defending American League champions, came within an inning in the seventh game of winning their first World Series title since 1948. This one comes out of New York. Well, not specifically New York, but the New York Mets, who are, of course, at spring training. And Tim Tebow has made his debut with the Mets at spring training. He arrived yesterday at Port St. Lucie, Florida, and he talked a little bit about his goals as a baseball player.
What's up, guys? How we doing?
Hey, Tim. As you look to start now, really, on the path, what did you take out of your experience in the Arizona Fall League? Maybe...
Well, I think a lot. I think I learned a lot from first instructs, you know, being my first time back in baseball in 12 years. And then I think I learned a lot in Arizona Fall League. And I think offensively, defensively, you know, running the bases, everything. And then I think I probably learned as much in the off season working with, you know, being able to learn a lot from Goody in the Fall League, and then kind of after continue to work with him, and then being able to work with Kay Long and Murphy a lot this off season, Chad Moeller as well, to be able to really learn from those three guys and continue to pick their brains and just train, and also not necessarily be forced to go over something and then repeat that in a game. To be able to go over something, then go over it again, then go over it again, and be able to do that process for, you know, 10, 15 days in a row before you move on to the next thing. And I think for me, that's something that I'm really looking forward to, kind of taking a lot of the practice and the knowledge and things I've learned and try to, you know, apply it to practice every day and then eventually games and then games every day, and, you know, so I'm excited about that.
I can't tell you how much I love this story. I cannot tell you how much I love it, how much I'm rooting for him to make this work. I think it's an unbelievably outstanding, cool sports story for all of the right reasons. And by the way, he mentioned Murphy that he was working with. He's talking, of course, about Dan Murphy, all-star with the Mets, who said to reporters and media when he reported to the Mets spring training just a couple of days ago, he said very specifically, Tebow's power is real. It's not a myth. It's not a legend. It's not an accident. It is legitimate, and he can do this. Now, that's an all-star who's got no – he's not an agent. He's got no money in this. He makes nothing off this. He profits not. Only his judgment in baseball would be questioned. It's like, real dude, let's remind us not to, you know, if Tebow flames out, remind us not to hire you as a talent evaluator. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Excuse me, because he's got no reason to say this, but he said Tebow's power is real. Excuse me again.
And what I find interesting about this, too, is that I recall reading earlier in the winter that the Mets were thinking of not actually inviting him to spring training. I was personally a little bummed out at that point. So I'm glad that over the preceding months that the Mets have at least changed their minds, at least brought him to camp. I mean, it's kind of the way we said it last year. What's the harm? At least Right. Bring the kid to camp.
Yeah, exactly right. And if it doesn't pan out, you quickly re-sign him to the minor league
exactly.
camp and see what he does. And that's fine. And he's prepared to play this whole season, by the way. Oh, as a matter of fact, he is at minor league camp. Hold on a second. He was not invited to big league camp. He's preparing for the season in minor league camp. So that's where he is, in minor league camp. And that's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah. But he's at camp, though, is the point, with the Mets. And here's the story of the day today. The power that Dan Murphy talked about is real. Because according to reports literally from an hour ago from CBS Sports' Mike Axisa, I'm not really sure. At any rate, he's reporting that Tebow put on a power-hitting display in his very first workout in BP. Now, it is BP, but so, you know, take it for what it's worth. It's not live pitching, but you know how that goes. He was cranking home runs out left and right, literally left and right. from Rich Simini quoted in this article, quote, Tim Tebow is a batting practice hero. Just hit four homers in a span of five pitches, including two opposite field, hashtag Mets. So he's up there and showing this is legit. He has the strength. And now it's only batting practice, as everybody points out, but scouts use batting practice to evaluate players' ability. Going deep in BP, as often as he is, shows the strength is there. And then the question is can he translate that into games by making enough contact, reading the spin on the ball, making adjustments, at bat to at bat as pitchers adjust to him and what he likes? Those skills will determine whether he can do this or not and actually become a successful baseball player, or whether he's just a long ball and BP freak, off of some batting practice, old pitching coach. Doing that sort of thing. But I just love the fact that it's not an aberration. And Murphy again says it's not an aberration, that this is legitimate and this is real and this really could happen. And I hope he goes to minor league camp, completely rocks it, tears the cover off the ball, and maybe gets an opportunity, to play every single day. I just think it's a great, great story. There's nothing to not like about that story. There really just is not, unless you are just a hater of Tim Tebow and a hater of his Christian message, which he of course is very known to spread. He likes to spread the message of God and Christianity and tries to help people, and that rubs a lot of people the wrong way. But there's nothing to not root for in this Tim Tebow story. Got a couple more questions here for him. Hold on a second.
All right, good talk.
Tim, how comfortable are you with you're being marketed here? Never played in a minor league game, let alone a major league game. Curtis Granderson, sure, is not out there, but yours is. Are you okay with that?
I don't really pay attention to it. I drive in the back and I go get my uniform on. I get stretched. I just got done with the core workout and I'm gonna go get ready for practice here in a minute. I just kind of focus on what I can control and
the right answer.
My attitude, my effort, my focus, and trying to get better every single day. And I'm not going to worry about, what everyone's writing or what everybody's thinking or however I'm being marketed. I think for me, I just want to be able to continue the process, enjoy the process, enjoy every day, get to know my teammates, and, have fun out there.
It's a great answer. I mean, he was asked about, Curtis Granderson and others are saying this is nothing but a Mets marketing move. They're just doing this to sell tickets and merchandise. They have no intention of using him or keeping him, and this is just a joke. And it's a great point. Don't read it. Don't look at it. Don't listen to it. I go to the back. I report there. I get dressed. I stretch out, and I go do my work. And that's exactly what he ought to be saying, and it's exactly what I think is the right approach. And like I said, I really, really hope this works for him. And I'm not saying that he becomes an all-star. I hope he makes it to the major league someday. I don't expect it to be this year. But if he starts out at low A or double A or whatever the case might be with the Mets organization, I hope he has success and quickly rises to the triple A ranks. And whether it's in a year or 2 years, and he's given himself that kind of a window to make it to the big leagues, just even if it's as a utility player, even if it's just a bench designated hitter, with some pop who can, pinch hit once, just make it for a little while. Make it for a cup of coffee or two, just to shut all of the haters up who said this is nothing but a marketing ploy and who insist that he's holding back some other prospect who should be with the Mets organization, et cetera. It is a joke. It is wrong. It is just, haters going to hate. And I don't like using old cliches like that, but that's exactly what is happening here with Tim Tebow. So I, for one, am hoping that it works. All right, I'm going to get a timeout here, bottom of the hour. SportsCenter coming your way. And on the other side, we're going to talk about transgender athletes. We're going to talk about a young 17-year-old transgender person. All right? She's a girl who wants to be a boy. And because she wants to be a boy, she's taking testosterone therapy treatments. And because she's taking testosterone therapy treatments, she is getting enormously strong. And as she gets enormously strong, she is beating the living crap out of all of the female wrestlers that she is competing with in Texas. That's correct. She just won the state championship, completing a 56-0 record because she is taking male hormone supplements in order to go from female to male. And the rules require her to wrestle against other females. They have separate female wrestling divisions in Texas. And that's exactly what this person has done. And to say that it's controversial is an understatement on a billion different levels. You're going to want to hear the rest of the details of that story, and then I'm sure you're going to want to comment on it at 866-240-1065 right here on The Extravaganza.
Be part of The Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Indeed, back are we. 866-240-1065 is the number to get in, and you just heard the man. Dial it up. We'll put you up and on the radio. I want to talk a little bit about this story. Last weekend, the NBA held its All-Star game, as you know. Well, not last weekend, technically. It was the previous weekend, so a weekend and a half ago. Anyway, the All-Star game was in New Orleans, Louisiana this year. It wasn't supposed to be. It was supposed to be in Charlotte, North Carolina. The NBA moved the game from Charlotte, North Carolina to Louisiana because Adam Silver has put politics above the best interest of his host cities. And that's exactly what this was. I complained about it bitterly when he made the announcement. I continued to complain about it. I did not watch the festivities, in large part because of it, but also because it was unwatchable. But Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, puts politics above all else in this regard. So even though he's not a politician, he obviously has very close connections with many in the progressive community. But that's neither here nor there. The reason he moved it is because the city of Charlotte resides or rests in the state of North Carolina. In the state of North Carolina, they passed a law, a very simple law, that says if you're a boy, you use boy facilities, and if you're a girl, you use girl facilities. It shouldn't even need to be passed as a law because it's just about as simple and commonsensible as anything in the history of the world ever could be. If you don't know what you are, drop your pants, look down. And you will immediately know. If you are a male, you will have something there. If you are a female, you will have nothing there. And or something very, very different there. And then that's the restroom you use. That's the locker room you use. That's the shower room you use. That's the team you play on, et cetera, et cetera. About as simple as it gets, right? It's an elementary lesson that I think most schools cover in by second grade. I don't know, maybe even by kindergarten or preschool. Are you a boy or are you a girl? Well, there you go. So anyway, because the state of North Carolina passed that very common sense law. And Adam Silver said, no, you can't do that. That is somehow discriminatory against transgendered individuals. That is somehow discriminatory against the LGBT community. They said, if you don't rescind that law, if you don't make that go away, then we're taking away the tens of millions of dollars in economic benefit to the city of Charlotte and giving it to another city. So he did. And again, I kind of really, really resented that part of this thing. But now comes the part of the story which takes it to the next level, which is why I really oppose, one of the main reasons I oppose, any of these movements to normalize transgender accommodations. Because here's the story. The dirty little secret that a lot of people don't want to tell you about it is when you have a transgender student or a young person who says, you know, they're an anatomical male, for example, and they say, no, I'm a female. I really feel female. You don't understand. I really feel female. To me, it's simple confusion. It's a mental disturbance or a disorder that probably needs to be treated, but that's just a personal opinion. My concern is this. When they say, see, because a lot of people have said, okay, we'll deal with that. If you really are so uncomfortable using the facilities of the sex that you have been assigned at birth, we can make an accommodation for you here. You can use the teacher's facility. Or you can use the, sometimes they'll actually put, a non-identifiable restroom there that's open for anybody who wants to use it. It's just a single stall bathroom, you know, one person at a time. It's not an area where anybody else can come in. You know, we'll accommodate you and give you one of those. How's that sound? And the problem with that is you have too many of the transgendered community, which, by the way, is a very, very teeny tiny itsy bitsy 0.3% of the population community anyway. Saying, no, I don't want a special bathroom. I didn't say I feel like a special person, a non-entity. I feel like a girl or a female who's transgendered boy. I feel like a boy. I want the girl's room, not a special separate room for me because I'm some sort of separate oddity. I want the girl's room. And so politicians and their infinite wisdom say, okay, at least they did in the last presidential administration, okay, then you can have the girl's room. If you feel like a girl, you can go in the girl's room. If you feel like a boy, you can go in the boy's room. Basically, it's free for all. And I said, watch it, watch it, watch it, and stop it, stop it, stop it. Because when you accept the argument that you don't need special accommodations, We'll just treat you as a girl because that's what you say emotionally or mentally you feel like, or you feel like the opposite sex of you know, what you actually biologically are and anatomically are. When you do that for a bathroom, it's going to take three very, very short steps, and it's going to happen in short order. It's going to go from the bathroom, in which case people could say, well, there's stalls anyway, so it's private enough. I mean, leave it alone. I disagree with that, but okay. It's going to go from bathroom to, you know, I told you I feel like a girl, and you let me use the girl's bathroom. Well, I shouldn't have to change my clothes in the boys' locker room either. I should be able to change my clothes in the girls' locker room. So now I got an anatomical male in the locker room of an anatomical, of a bunch of females, a bunch of girls, a bunch of high school age girls or junior high girls, whatever the case might be. That's going to cause a problem for a lot of girls and the fathers and mothers of a lot of very protective other fathers and mothers of girls. I don't want boys in the locker room while my girls are changing, you know, out of their clothes into their gym clothes or their practice clothes or whatever the case might be. The next step, of course, is from the locker room. Well, you know what we do after we change and after we have our workout or our practice, there's a shower room. Some of them are private stalls. Some of them are open shower rooms. If you've been in a high school shower room, you know what I'm talking about. And I've been into many of them. And hey, you know what? You said I get to be a girl. You said all I have to do is feel this way. I get to shower in the same open shower rooms with those girls. And then the last step, of course, is the most dangerous one from a sports perspective, which is why I'm talking about this on a sports radio show. Sooner or later, little Johnny, who insists that no, he's Jane, is going to say, look, you let me use the girl's restroom because you accept that I'm a girl. You let me use the girl's locker room because you accept that I'm a girl. You let me use the girl's shower room because you accept that I'm a girl. I want to compete against the girls. That will be the next step. I want to play against the girls. I want to play volleyball with the girls on the girls' volleyball team. I want to play tennis against the girl players. Et cetera, et cetera. That is the very slippery slope that we will slide down very, very quickly, and girls' sports will be in extreme jeopardy. Now, we have seen examples of this. As a male, anatomical male, won a track championship in Alaska, I believe it was. We talked about this, Jim Cushman, 3 or 4 months ago, if you recall, toward the end of the track season. There was a track champion, and he set all kinds of records running against the girls in track. Which brings us current to this part of the story, today's story. Today's story comes from Texas, as I mentioned, Cypress to be precise. Now this, instead of being a boy going in there to compete against girls, and in this, like the scenario I just described, this is a girl who is supposed to compete against girls, but who thinks that he is a boy, or she is a boy, and she is transitioning to become a boy. And in the process of transitioning to become a boy, she is being given, under a doctor's care, testosterone treatments. Something that would be called, in any other avenue of athletic competition, performance-enhancing drugs, in order to help this person become a male. Those performance-enhancing drugs, otherwise known as testosterone treatments, have made her way bigger and way stronger than any of her female counterparts. Now, Texas is one of a handful of states that actually has separate divisions for boys and girls wrestling. In many states, as you know, and Ohio is one of them, there just aren't girls' divisions for wrestling. So if you're a female and you want to wrestle, they have to put you on the boys' team. And good luck to you, and see where it goes. But she has, or in this state, they have girls wrestling and boys wrestling, and the state directive is, according to the law, you must wrestle or compete according to the biological gender on your birth certificate. This would stop what I described before as my concern. It would stop an anatomical birth certificate identifying male from saying, hey, but I feel like a girl, and I get to go wrestle with the girls. So that's what the rule is intended to stop, and because of that, it has this unintended consequence. A big, strong female, but who is big and strong like a male, complete with armpit hair growing, like a guy would, and being forced to compete against females. The result? Well, you can imagine. 56-0, state championship in the 110-pound weight class, won the championship match 12-2, pinned virtually everybody but prior to that because he, she, this person, whatever you want to say, I'm trying to not be offensive, is just bigger and stronger than everybody else. If any other female in the competition had been taking the same drugs that this individual had been taking, they would have been suspended from competition, probably kicked out of the sport because it would have been considered an illegal performance-enhancing drug. But because this person says, no, you don't understand, I feel male, so therefore I get to take this stuff, the entire competition is now skewed. And quite frankly, the entire competition is now screwed because there is no chance. They're all of the opponents of this individual are screwed because of the massive advantage this person, whose name is Mac Beggs, Mac, M-A-C-K, Beggs, because of the drugs that this person is allowed to use. To say that the responses have been controversial is an understatement. Some are just completely apoplectic about this. They're so upset that their daughters had to wrestle against somebody with a huge advantage of being essentially boy-like in terms of the strength and the size and everything else that she had, you know, become. And others are saying, you know what, it's just a better test, and that's fine. Let him do what he wants to do, or let her do what she wants to do, etc. But there is a lawsuit now that is pending. They're trying to get injunctions filed to stop this individual from competing. They obviously didn't get it done in time. Attorney Jim Bowden, as I guess is how I'll pronounce that one, tried and failed to get injunctions before the district and regional meets to prevent Beggs from competing while transitioning and taking testosterone. This particular attorney is the parent of another wrestler at another school who has never had to face Beggs. The Associated Press earlier this week said that the individual does not blame Beggs for the situation, but faults the UIL, which is the rule essentially that says that girls have to wrestle according to their girl, or according to their, let me do that again. Everybody has to wrestle according to the sex on their birth certificate. 95% of the school superintendents in Texas voted for the rule as it was proposed to use birth certificates. So any rule can be reconsidered, but given the overwhelming support for this rule, they don't expect it to change anytime soon. So there, I laid it out in detailed fashion. Some of the concern with all of this transgenderism and how it's going to impact sports. We've seen it impact sports in the way that I first described with the track championship. A biological male running against females and destroying them all and setting all kinds of state records on the in the process. Now we see it going in the other direction. Somebody who's taking drugs to become the other sex, competing against the same sex, and, of course, dominating them on the basis of that. How would you deal with this if this was somebody that your son or daughter were competing against? That's what I want to know. Would you be okay with this transitioning individual taking testosterone, muscle-building drugs, making them bigger and stronger than your daughter ever could be, and then being forced to compete in a physically grueling match against one another? Would you be okay with that? Or would you say, no, this is patently unfair? Somebody like this wants to be a boy, then they go compete against the boys. Somebody like this wants to be a girl, then they go compete against the girls. But if you do that, then like I said, then you run into the track scenario I described from Alaska. How do you feel about it, mom or dad? All right? Because I think this is a very, very big issue. And that's why this bathroom thing is everybody tries to be politically correct. Everybody tries to be progressive on this issue. And all of the other things that are going on, they're going to end up hurting whom? It's probably going to end up hurting women. It's going to end up hurting girls' sports because they're the ones who are going to most always suffer against either somebody like this who's trying to become a male and then is forced to compete against females to that great advantage, or they're going to be a male who actually says, I feel female, you have to let me play against the females. That is the direction we are heading. It is a dangerous one, and it completely flies in the face of what Title IX was for. Title IX was supposed to give girls equal access to all sports. And if they don't have that sport for girls, to let them participate with boys. That is how it was supposed to be done. And Title IX now is in very, very serious jeopardy. Kevin in Toledo, you are on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks for your patience while I went through that long soliloquy of the story. But you're on the air now. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say, you know, I'm in agreement with you to a certain degree. Well, what I really want to say is, see, when, like you said, when you open the door for the bathroom, you have to open the door all the way for everything else.
Right.
So I have two boys, and if either of my sons ran into a situation with a girl on any level of sports that's taking testosterone and everything, I wouldn't be the one to complain about it and say it's unfair. The only thing I can tell you is to compete like you would compete against any other boy that's out there. You know, because at this point, we're in a day and age where it's going to happen anyway. So all you can do is tell your kid to go out there and compete as if she was a boy, and, you know, and do your best. Now, what about
the advantage part again? Because if either one of your sons were to take a drug, that would increase their testosterone, thus making them stronger and bigger and better. You know, kind of like steroids. That's what testosterone is. It's a precursor to steroids. Testosterone
HGH and all those things.
Yeah, but I'm trying to say the name androstenedione. That's not it. What was Mark McGuire first busted with when he had it in his locker room?
Oh, I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, but it was something like that. I don't know why. Suddenly I'm having a big brain cramp here and I cannot pronounce the word. But at any rate, these testosterone treatments are making them bigger and stronger, and your boys aren't allowed to do that. If they were to pump themselves full of that, just by an example, they would be suspended from competition. Yet their opponents are allowed to use it because they say that they, you know, but they feel like something else, and it just creates an unlevel playing field for all athletes to compete on.
It does, and I totally agree with you on that. But really, there's nothing that you could do about it as a parent, because first of all, anything you say against it, you're gonna be the bad guy or the bad woman. You know, so all you could do was tell your kids to go out there and compete. And yes, it is unfair, and it's unfortunate that we're in a day and age where that's becoming an issue, and it already is an issue in some areas of the United States. But, you know, only thing you can do is tell your kids to compete. Because, like I said, I mean, if you say anything about it, if you speak up against it, now you're the bad guy that's picking on, you know, that's picking on the girl or the boy or the parents of the boy or girl that's going through this situation. So, but I would say this. I mean, like I said, you can't say yes to one thing and not say yes to the other.
Right. Because that's what slippery slope means. And you're right. You open that door a crack, then you got to push it all the way open and say, okay, if we're accepting you as whatever you think you are, rather than what your birth certificate and your biology says you are, then we got to keep it open the entire way, Kevin. You're 100%
exactly.
Right. Thank you for the call, my friend. I appreciate it. I want to see what Joe in Toledo think. And you're right, by the way. We're going to get, I'll get called to bat. I promise you, there are people who are probably already typing. They're typing hate mail right now to me, or they're typing nasty tweets to me or whatever, and they're going to call me intolerant or bigoted or homophobic or non-LGBT friendly or whatever they want to say. And that's fine. I'm a big boy. I can take criticism. I've been getting criticism on the radio for 20 years in this business. So that's fine. But the fact remains, there are going to be people who are completely and severely disadvantaged by these new acceptances of a transgender community that, quite frankly, like I said, is forcing 97% of the population to change because of their own personal feelings. Understand, we're talking 3% of the population, 3%, less than 3% of the population is identified as transgendered. So 97% of what has always been historically and normally and traditionally done has to be upset and changed because of the feelings of 3% or less than 3%. It's a very, very strange circumstance, but it's what we're in. Joe in Toledo is next. Hi, Joe. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, Joe. What's on your mind?
It just, this whole issue that's going on, you know, it's just, it's so much larger than even the sports, but it's just society in general.
You're right, and I'm trying to keep the focus on sports because it's a sports station,
correct,
and it's a sports show, but you're right. It is much bigger than just this. I'm just kind of narrow casting this down to the sports.
No, and I understand that. It's sad that it's come to this. I'm probably roughly about your age, and, mm-hmm, and it's just sad that it's come to this. I've got grandchildren that you have to try to explain this to, and it's just sad that this has come to this, you know, in my opinion. But what I really wanted to say is, I appreciate your honesty. I've been listening to you since you took over for the gentleman before you.
Uh-huh.
And you're one of the few people that I feel that actually speaks his mind and is not afraid to, you know, not to tiptoe around things. You, in this day and age, everybody's so afraid to say something, and I just want to say thanks for your honesty, to be honest with you.
Well, that's very nice of you to say, and you are correct. That is exactly how I approach it. I'm not going to tell a fake story or give a fake opinion because it's the popular opinion or one that people are going to, you know, not be mad about because I'm afraid of somebody not liking what I say. I'm going to tell you the truth as I see it. I'll give you my opinion. When it's a fact, I'll tell you it's a fact, researched and sourced. And when it's my opinion, I'll tell you it's my opinion. But either way, it's going to be an honest one, and I'm not going to sugarcoat
it. Well, I just want to let you know, feelings. It's respected. I may not always agree with you, but it is respected. So
amen.
I just wanted to say that.
God bless, man. Thank you for the call.
All right, you too. Thanks.
And nor should you agree with every single thing I say. I don't think anybody should ever agree with everything somebody else says, because the only person who should do that is them. I mean, really, nobody should be in your mind and just thinking exactly the way you do other than you. If somebody else is doing that, then they're just sycophantic, and that's not helping anyone. Bill in Toledo is next. Hey, Bill, you're on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Go right ahead.
Thanks for letting me talk. Hey, I think this is a pretty easy issue. I don't really care one way or another if they're going one way or the other, and my personal opinion of the situation doesn't matter. But while they're on those drugs, they should have to follow the same rules as everybody else. So if they're taking testosterone to change their sex, they should have to follow the rules that says they can't play on, you know, when they're done taking those drugs, if there's ever a time where they're done taking them, they participate as whatever they are. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with what's on your birth certificate.
That's a great point you just made. Why don't we just have a temporary suspension of this drug course you're on as you try to change yourself from one sex to the other during the season, or even in leading up, maybe you just say during the school year so you don't actually train while on testosterone building those muscles. But you are not allowed to be on any of these illegal performance-enhancing drugs that any other student or athlete is not allowed to have. And then once the season is over, if you want to resume whatever it is you want to resume with your doctor, go right ahead. And it's your choice.
Right.
If you choose to keep using the drugs, then you don't get to play. Just like anybody who chooses to use a recreational drug. If you choose to be a pothead, guess what? You get kicked off of your wrestling team. If you choose to use cocaine, you're going to get kicked off your wrestling team and probably out of school.
Life is about choices, right? Life is about choices.
Bingo.
And you know, whether you're transgender or whether you're heterosexual, bisexual, whatever you are, life is about choices. And if you choose, maybe being the transgender is more important than wrestling. So you don't wrestle. So maybe you want to wrestle and you get off the drugs for that amount of time.
For as long as it takes, right, to make sure they're out of your system and so that you are competing on the same level playing field with the others of your sex.
Thanks for the call, man.
Great call. Thank you for the call. Thanks for making it. I got some very, very smart people in this audience. There's no doubt about that. I appreciate all of the thoughtful responses to this. I want to keep them up. We will continue this in the next half hour. We're going to talk to Bill Clark after the top of the hour Sports Center about a very important event that is coming up that he wants to shine a spotlight on and tell you how you can get tickets to. But after that, we'll take more of your phone calls at 866-240-1065 right here. Hey, you know what? Before I do this, I got something else cool for you on the way into the top of the hour Sports Center. Have you ever watched Impractical Jokers? Kush, you watch that on True TV?
I've caught it a couple times, yeah.
Hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
My kids and I laugh our heads off at it. My wife just kind of pretends not to find it funny, but I catch her snickering from time to time. These guys are hilarious. Beat the Box Office is what I'm trying to say. Tickets to see the Impractical Jokers, they're going to be at the Toledo Zoo in July on the 6th. And tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. I've got a pair I'll give to you free right now to the Impractical Jokers at the Toledo Zoo July 6th by beating the box office at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We'll give them to you if you are caller number 8. How about that? Caller number 8. Good luck to you from the ticket. Back after this.
To Simpson, stutter step move, drives on Swanigan, lays it up and in. Topside Bogner, catch and shoot for three, got it. Mo Wagner with his 35th three ball of the year. Michigan's in front by 5 from Bogner, now feeds him. He fires the three, and the teardrop falls.
You got to be kidding me, Mo Wagner. You're bringing that type of game here today. That's unbelievable.
Tosses to Wagner. He'll fire for another three and another make. Come on! Mo Wagner's got 17 first half points. Wagner, he'll take another three. Ring it up! Feeds Duncan Robinson, turns for three. Got it! Right corner! As time expires, Duncan Robinson with barely a step to knock home the right corner three. tosses to an open Wilson who dunks it. Left baseline jam for DJ Wilson's second field goal today. Michigan's back in front by 13. Simpson for three. Get in there. Got it! Michigan's going to win it by 12, Terry, over the 14th ranked team in the country.
Tobias to John Moore. Body control and a deuce. Don't look now, but we're all tied at 84. Horford top side to Thomas. Launches, hits at KCP. Fires, fills it. That's a triple, folks. He has a dozen, and we are tied. Side to Brown, short with a shot. Tapped up, though, and in by Smart. Kentavious top side. Three is through. Kentavious Caldwell Pope. Brown from the corner. Drills it. Making a five-point play. Crowder boards it, and Boston wins it.
It's hard. I mean, you're playing a really good team, the number two team in the East, and you're right in the game the whole way. You know, you have a chance to win, so you got to be pretty happy with that, and you got to be pretty upset as a coach when you don't help your team more than I do. Shoot, triple team him, run everybody at him. I mean, bottom line is when they hit the fourth quarter, and this is, I don't mean any disrespect to any of their other players. He's playing so well right now that he's just a one-man team.
If Darren Williams wants to force it, he can probably get through waivers. I think it's likely he get the Cavs get the backup point guard they've been looking for and LeBron's been looking for all season.
The piece to make them a winner in the finals, I won't say that. However, I think this is a big deal to get a guy like this with experience, who can run pick and rolls, who can take advantage of other small point guards, and just knows how to play. I think this is a big deal for the Cavs.
This is big in particular for the regular season. We got to find ways to limit the usage of Kyrie and LeBron. You're going to need somebody that can create with the second unit, somebody that can play pick and roll, somebody that can make the three that is a veteran, hungry to win a championship.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, yeah. Hour number two is underway. Thanks so much for joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. And we remain Toledo's sports leader. We'll get back to the discussion of the transgender high school wrestling champion, a female who is taking male supplements and hormones to become male, who has put on a ton of muscle and strength and dominated a 56-0 senior season, including a state championship, over all females. That is a problem for a lot of people. We'll get back to those calls and the analysis of that situation in a bit. But we do want to stay in the high school realm, by the way. That's why we want to say good afternoon once again to our good friend Bill Clark. He is the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio and in Southeast Michigan, for that matter. And he's here to tell us about a scholar-athlete banquet that is coming up that you might be very interested in. First of all, Bill, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Bob. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's always a pleasure to talk high school sports with you, even when we're not analyzing games or making predictions of tournaments. You've got some other good stuff going on here. Tell us what's coming up on March 6th at Seagate Center.
Yeah, March 6th at Seagate, about 6:30, Pat Fitzgerald, the head coach of the Northwestern Wildcats, is going to be our featured speaker. I'm privileged to be on the board of directors of the Toledo Wister chapter of the National Football Foundation, and every year we honor senior football players who have excelled on the field, in the classroom, and in their communities, and we honor them at a banquet. And we've had the privilege of having Jim Harbaugh, Brian Kelly, Brady Hoke, Urban Meyer. So we've had some big-name speakers, and this year's is just as big with, as we said, the head coach of the Northwestern Wildcats, Pat Fitzgerald. He will be addressing 44 senior football players from Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan who have been chosen by our selection committee, having met the criteria of at least a 3.2 grade point average. They have to be at least all league status and then also be involved in their school community and their home community as well. The average grade point average of these 44 young men is about 3.76. We've got four young men who are number one in their class.
Wow.
One young man that you're familiar with, Pete McIntyre from St. John's Jesuit, he's one of our honored players. He's going to go to Northwestern, so it'll be kind of fun for him to have a chance to talk to his coach that he'll be spending some time with over the next couple of years. But as we said, the tickets are $50 a piece, or you can buy a table of 10 for $450. It is at the Seagate Center. We also are going to honor 17 area coaches who have had exceptional seasons this year as well. And we also are going to be honoring Dave Hackenberg as our media award Tom Santoro, the assistant coach award, will be going to a coach from Hicksville. We've got Alan Block from BCSN is going to be our distinguished citizen, and several other more awards that we will be giving out. But the most fun part is we will also be awarding $20,000 in scholarships to six young men who were our honored athletes last year. And in their first year in college, they have reapplied to our organization to get one of several scholarships, some total $2,000 or $3,000. A couple are $1,500. And based on their first year in college, they don't necessarily even have to be playing football. But if they're one of our honored students from last year, one of our honored scholar athletes from last year, and they reapply for this scholarships that we offer, they can still win those even if they're not playing football. So that's kind of cool, too. So we've got six young men who are going to pick up close to $20,000 in scholarships. So it's a big night. This is the 55th annual Toledo Worcester Chapter National Football Foundation banquet. And like I said, starts about 6:30 next Monday the 6th. Tickets are available at Team Sports. You can ask for Rachel at 419-865-TEAM, T-E-A-M. And she'll hook you up with tickets, $50 each, or a table of 10 for $450. That's pretty much the story, but it's a fun night, and some really exceptional young men and coaches will be honoring next week.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is a great event, it sounds like, and it's a great story, and I think it's fascinating. Now, when you talked about the number 44 kids that are going to be honored here, does that number change year to year? Does anybody who meets the criteria of 3.2 or higher and was at least all league, do they automatically get recognized at this event and honored at this event? Or is there a cap or something like that?
Well, there's not a cap, Bob, but what happens is we take as many kids that we feel meet the criteria. Some of them, even though they might have the grade point average to qualify, they may not do enough in the community, or they do a lot in the community, but they're not all league. So these 44 men, 44 young men. This is the largest class we've ever had. Last year we had 36. So to answer your question, yes, it varies from year to year, but this year's class is the largest class we've ever had. But and these,
so,
as
so
I
two
said,
of those variables are not negotiable. The grade point
right.
average and the all league minimum, that's not negotiable. So where the committee comes into play is when they deciding what's good enough in the community. How much work are
right.
they doing outside of the football program? Are they doing with the community or the school community?
Exactly. And we've got young men involved in youth football, flag football. They coach youth basketball. And they may be two or three sport athletes, too. That doesn't necessarily hurt their chances. We've got one young man, Gunner Oaks, from Swanton. He was all league in three sports. He's going to Eastern Michigan. And I, off the top of my head, I don't know exactly, but I'm pretty sure his grade point average is in the 3.8 era.
Wow.
So those are the kind of kids that we're getting. And it's a tough It's a very tough process for our selection committee. A number of our board members are on the selection committee, and they're made up of ex-football coaches, guys that have given their lives to high school football for years and years and years. And so they are very particular in making sure that, you know, only the creme de la creme are the ones that get honored. And once you meet these three criteria, like I said, with an average grade point average of about 3.76 for 44 young men, we got a lot of very intelligent football players coming to the banquet.
You certainly do, and that's a great thing. So, Bill, one more time, Bill Clark is our guest. Bill is, of course, the voice of high school sports, and also, as you just heard, heavily involved with the National Football Foundation. And this great event is coming up a week from today, Monday, March 6th at Seagate. Give us the information again on tickets.
It's the tickets are available at Team Sports. You can call Rachel at Team Sports at 419-865-TEAM. Tickets are $50 each, or you can get a table of 10 for $450. And one other thing, Bob, that I wanted to point out that these kids do, they all come to the banquet at about 3 o'clock, and we get a bus, and we take these kids over to the Mercy's Children's Hospital, and they visit with the kids who happen to be in the hospital, the young kids,
wow.
little kids. So they spend time with them, and also Coach Fitzgerald will also be making that trip to the hospital. So it's another opportunity for these kids to give back to their different communities. And they have a great time with these kids. They don't spend a lot of time. It's only about an hour because there's
sure.
obviously a very big time crunch next week. But they'll get over there about 4:30, spend some time with the kids, give them T-shirts and stuff like that. So the kids get a little tip of the cap as well. But these young men that go over, and then, like I said, Coach Fitzgerald will also be going over to the hospital with the kids. So it's a big night, and we're really appreciative of having Coach Fitzgerald with us. He's an amazing speaker, we're told, and obviously he's turned that program around at Northwestern. So
I'm
it's going to be
fan.
A big night for football.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Pat Fitzgerald. I always have been. Even as a linebacker, he was a tremendous linebacker when he played there as well. And by the way, God, do I feel old the fact that he has been coaching. He's 42 years old. He's been coaching for so long. I mean, I remember watching him play. I mean, really amazing how time passes by. But he is a great coach. I'm a big fan of his as well. And that's a great get for you guys as your featured speaker.
He'll do you guys very proud.
No doubt about that.
Absolutely.
Bill, thanks so much for the information. 1 week from tonight, we hope we'll get a lot of people out there, buy those tables of 10 and save a few bucks and go out there and support a bunch of very, very great accomplished kids. Bill Clark,
Bob, we appreciate
it. You got
it, buddy. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
You got it. Thank you, Bill Clark. All right, here's what we're going to do. Get a quick timeout now. And on the other side, I want to get the phones going again at 866-240-1065. How do you feel about the transgender athlete beating all of the girls while taking performance-enhancing drugs to everybody else? But to this person, because she wants to be a he, they're just testosterone treatments. 56-0 state champion, everybody else's dreams crushed under the weight and the strength of essentially what is now the size and strength of a boy competing against the girls in wrestling. How do you feel about that story we told you last half hour? We'll get some more of your thoughts coming right up on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, we continue now at 4:25. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, maybe 15, we are going to talk with Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. He'll talk to us about the big win over Maryland and see what that means as the Buckeyes try to finish with a strong close to their season heading toward the Big Ten tournament. Michigan, you heard that in the top of the hour montage as well. Michigan just got a big win over Purdue. So two of the teams that we cover from the Big Ten, the closest, doing some good things here, doing some damage. To other top highly rated Big Ten opponents as we head toward that that conference tournament. By the way, congratulations to Jeremy Inbody of North Baltimore. He was the winner of the tickets to go see Impractical Jokers. We'll give away four more pairs of those between now and Thursday. So make sure you're listening every afternoon between 3 and 5, and we'll set you up if you want to go see the guys. These guys are just hilarious. Absolutely love that show. And you're going to have a good time there at the Toledo Zoo on July 6th. So congratulations to Jeremy. Okay, so I don't want to retell the story myself because I really put a lot into it, and it was very detailed and very thorough. Not that I apologize for that, but it took a long time. And in the interest of not taking as much time, I'm going to play a short report here for you from Yahoo News talking about Cypress, Texas, and the wrestler known as Mac Beggs, who is a biological female and as such should be wrestling in the female division and is. But Mac Beggs says she is a transgendered boy and actually should be a male, so is taking male testosterone treatments to make that happen. The testosterone, as you can imagine, have pumped her up with muscles and strength that girls just don't have, and naturally, now that she is essentially a boy in a girl's body, he has dominated the girls' division, 56-0 in a state championship. That doesn't sit well with some people. Here's a little bit of the story.
Mac Beggs looks like many anxious, brooding teenage boys, fidgeting and trying to focus. The undefeated wrestler is getting into competition mode before the Texas State High School tournament in Houston in the girls' 110-pound weight class. The 17-year-old was born female, but is transitioning to male with the aid of testosterone therapy. Beggs told a Dallas newspaper he'd compete against boys if he could, but state rules won't allow it. The Dallas area teen won his first match on Friday against Taylor Latham. Latham's mother says she empathizes with Beggs, but
it's not fair for that individual that wants to transition and wrestle boys. It's not fair for the female wrestlers with this unfair advantage.
Beggs competes against girls because the state policy for athletics requires students to wrestle against the gender listed on their birth certificate.
We believe having those separate divisions has led to the overwhelming success of the sport in our state and the high volume of participation in our state as compared to others.
Texas is one of a handful of states that has separate boys and girls wrestling competitions and has thousands of participants. As for the hormone use, the state policy allows Beggs to compete because he's changing genders under the care of a doctor. In a previous tournament, two of Beggs' opponents forfeited rather than fight. This man says if his daughter faced the transgendered teen, she'd compete.
No, she's never backed down from a wrestling match, and she's not going to start today.
Beggs is suddenly in the limelight, caught in the whirlwind of a fiercely political issue, and is unsurprisingly shy of the national media attention and cameras trained on his every movement.
It doesn't
doesn't really bother me if, like, a girl's in the boys' bracket or something. So
I don't know. I've never heard of an athlete being allowed to use enhancements of any kind. Okay. So I was shocked.
And if she thinks that she is capable to compete with the boys, then she should be able to compete with the boys.
A victorious Beggs and his grandmother slipped out of the arena before reporters could catch up. He told us he'll talk after the tournament is over. John Moan, Associated Press.
All right, so there's the AP News report is where that came from. I found it via Yahoo. So I think that mother at the very end said it best. If this individual thinks that they're a boy and can compete with the boys, go compete with the boys and stop taking an unfair advantage over all of the girls who aren't on testosterone treatments, right? You'd think there's the solution. Just make a little caveat. If a girl thinks she's good enough to fight with the boys, let her go fight with the boys. The problem with that is gender equity, Title IX. The problem with that is if you let them do that, you have to let it go in the other direction for the sake of consistency and equality. And then if a boy says, you know, yeah, I might be, 5'10" and 160 pounds and I can bench 275 and the nearest girl can bench is 110, but I really feel female, and you know what? I want to go and wrestle against the women or the girls. If you let girls who think they're boys wrestle against boys, then you have to let boys who think that they're girls wrestle against girls, do you not? Either way, it is a major, major disaster. In my estimation, it should be very simple. If you are a girl, anatomically, and your birth certificate confirms that you are a female, that your sex is female. And by the way, I'm never going to use the word gender because there is no gender. There are sexes. There are males and there are females. Gender is a state of mind. And it, to me, it is a very confusing state of mind. And it's very, all it does is muddy the waters. So if you are anatomically a female, then you wrestle in the female division, period. And while you're wrestling, by the way, you are not allowed to use any performance enhancing drugs. Not steroids, not... Oh, by the way, I kept trying to figure out why I couldn't say the word androstenedione. I kept saying Andrew. It's Andro. It's short for androstenedione that Mark McGuire once had. But you can't use any of those testosterone treatment drugs, whether it's because you think you're a boy and you're trying to transition or whatever the case might be. You can't use anything that any of the other competitors are not allowed to use. It is the only way to make it a fair fight. And that, to me, is the ultimate solution here. But the problem is we have gone down this slippery slope and we're trying desperately to hang on right now. We slide down because some elected officials have said, no, let's let anybody use any bathroom that they want. If that's who they say mentally they identify with, even if, physically that does not match their characteristics. Anybody can use whatever they want. And the problem is when you give them the bathroom, you then give them the locker room. When you give them the locker room, you then give them the shower room. When you give them all of those things, you give them the team. You can wrestle on whichever team you feel most comfortable with. And that will destroy girls' sports. If you want girls to have an opportunity to have their sports under Title IX equal and accessible, then you have to stop this transgender nonsense from invading the sports world. Boys compete against boys, girls compete against girls, always and forever, and that's the way it's got to be. You have thoughts on it? I'd like to hear them at 866-240-1065. I'm going to talk to Paul Keels coming up after SportsCenter right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Alrighty then, we roll onward, 4:39, just 21 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you on the program. Then Mike Miller with his version of awesome as well on Drive Time, so stay right where you are. Appreciate you being with us. Really good conversation with Bill Clark on some of the high school sports stuff, and then really, really want to talk more about that wrestling as we go. But for now, let's turn away from that and get into college basketball as we have our regular Monday segment with the great voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes on the Buckeyes Radio Network, of which, of course, we are proud to be a part here at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Paul Keels joining us right here on the Extravaganza. Hey, Paul, how are you?
I'm good, Bob. How you doing?
I'm great. Good to talk to you again. Certainly appreciate your time always. So where has that been all season long? You know, I mean, the Buckeyes this entire season up and down, and nothing really consistent, near the bottom of the Big Ten all season long. And then, man, number 16, Wisconsin, just run into a freight train all of a sudden. Where did that come from, a 10-point win over the 16th-ranked Badgers?
Well, you know, they'd had these close calls against good teams. I think they just decided to blow one of them out for a change. You know, there's a few things, Bob, that go into it. One of the things that gives you a chance at times against Wisconsin, for as good as they can be, they're a team that can run into some serious shooting droughts. And so what Ohio State decided to do to kind of force the issue, any time that either Nigel Hayes or Ethan Happ got the ball down on the block, they decided to double-team them and force them to throw the ball to some of their perimeter shooters and, you know, kind of force the issue there. I think also the other thing, you saw some balanced scoring. We saw C.J. Jackson kind of finally deliver what the coaches had been telling us they saw when they recruited him out of junior college with an outstanding shooting game. And everybody else kind of picked up the pace. So it really was a good – as Thad Matta said on his radio show – it was exciting to see, but then he was frustrated because where's that been all year?
Yeah, and that's exactly the question, because if you can do that, I mean, obviously you have the ability to do that against a team like Wisconsin. It's got to be there on a more consistent basis. One thing you can't account for, though, and you talked about it, Wisconsin is a team that can get into these, you know, these lulls shooting the basketball. A little bit of a perfect storm here, Paul, because the Buckeyes shot the lights out, especially from deep. 10 out of 16 from three-point range, that's 62%. The highest, I am told by ESPN, highest shooting percentage from beyond the arc since 2006. That's over a decade.
Wow. That I was not aware of. And I think the other part, too, Bob, was you saw Ohio State really kind of hold their own at the free throw line. That's what's gotten them in trouble in some of the close games they've had against ranked teams. If you think back to Virginia, you think back to Purdue, you think back to the home game against Maryland, maybe even the away game against Maryland, it's been their difficulty at the foul line that's caused them problems. So they were able to do that. And, you know, what's also been nice to see is these young players like C.J. Jackson, like Micah Potter, like Andre Wesson, start to play a little more than just like first-year players. Jackson's a sophomore, the other two are freshmen. But these guys have been able to give them some quality minutes. And then if you're able to get what we've become accustomed to seeing from Jayshon Tate, it wasn't a great game for Mark Loving, but he held up his end of it at the foul line. And Trevor Thompson was able to kind of start to show a little more what he showed in early January. So I think it's not kind of all fallen on one or two players.
Yeah, solid double-double for Jayshon, by the way, 15 points and 12 rebounds, so that was certainly big. We're talking to Paul Keels about the Buckeyes' win over Wisconsin this past week. They did not play this weekend. Jim Cushlin is with us as well, and Jimmy's got a question. Go ahead, Jim.
You know, as I look at this too, Paul, this was a huge win for a bunch of reasons. Obviously, it snapped the current three-game losing skid the Buckeyes are on, and even though in past conversations in recent weeks we talked about this probably won't help anything NCAA tournament-wise given where they're at, or even really NIT where they're probably going, a win like this with two games left at Penn State tomorrow and then Indiana on Saturday to close out the regular season, it puts them in a logjam tie. Indiana, Ohio State, Penn State, Nebraska, all at 6-10. Point I'm trying to make here is if they could build on this Wisconsin win, have a good week, then maybe they can at least get out of having to play in that very first round of the Big Ten tournament next Wednesday.
That's kind of the hurdle we've been looking at, Jim. And just doing some early looking at it today, not certain if this is 100% correct, but if they're able to win these two remaining games, I think that does get them out of playing on Wednesday. It would give them the tiebreaker over both Penn State and Indiana, whom they only play once. They lose any tiebreakers with Nebraska or Illinois. I think that's really the only ones that are kind of close enough into the picture. But there's also a devil's advocate to that. Would it not help them to have an extra game to be able to get a win and stay over 500 to get into the NIT? You know, or maybe even build some momentum. I think we know how tough it is to go Wednesday through Sunday, especially since the extra day has been added. But yeah, that does give them a smaller goal now to kind of look for, knowing that if they're able to take care of these two games, then that probably does get them out of playing that first day.
Which do you prefer if you had your druthers, Paul? Would you like to play in that first game and like you said, just get another win to add to the resume for the NIT? Or would you be more, you know, like Jim was saying, hey, let's avoid that because it's too tough to go Wednesday through Sunday?
You know how I'd answer that, Bob? It would depend on who they potentially would draw in a first game, whether it was Wednesday or Thursday. You know, there's certain matchups that, you know, just like we hear people talk with the NCAA tournament, there's certain matchups that you might possibly like to see more than others. So, and you know, having said all of that, now I'm not sure who you'd want it to be. Even you look at Rutgers, the way they're playing as of late, they're playing better basketball, so they're scary, even if you would draw them as a number 14 seed. I guess, all things being equal, it probably would not be a bad idea if they had the extra day's rest, because really, Bob, think about it. What helped them in this game last week against Wisconsin was playing on Thursday, as opposed to having to play Tuesday or Wednesday. So you remember in January we were talking about how brutal that schedule's been.
Right.
Now they get to take advantage of, you know, having had their weekend bye. They had an extra day to get ready for Wisconsin, and then they'll be at home on Saturday. So if all things are being equal as best we could guess, I'd say if you can avoid playing till Thursday, that's probably a good thing.
So in order to do that, you'd, like you said and Jim said, the Buckeyes would have to beat both Penn State and Indiana. Let's talk about those challenges, given the fact that they are in the same exact boat. As Jim read down that little glut there toward the bottom of the standings at 6-10, you know, Penn State's in the same situation. They need to win their last couple, Indiana as well, to try to avoid that. So everybody's got the same motivation. The question is who's playing better and how do you foresee it, starting with the Nittany Lions?
Well, and the tough part of that is because of the schedules they're playing. I think Penn State has played better basketball, but they don't have the wins to show for it. They lost a tough one at Minnesota last week. In midweek, they took Purdue to overtime and lost. And previous to that, they had won three in a row, including beating Maryland. Indiana has had some crazy games. I know last week they had an overtime game. They lost at Iowa. But Indiana's a team that's been hurt by injury. When you consider OG Anunoby has been out, and they've really been out without Colin Hartman since before the season started, and went through part of the year without James Blackman. I would probably guess and say Penn State's been playing a little better basketball, even though both of them have just run into some difficult times trying to get wins.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Penn State's on the three-game losing streak, as you kind of alluded to before. They have Ohio State and finish with Iowa, and then Indiana had a five-game streak that they finally snapped with the win over Northwestern. And they've got Purdue, by the way, which makes it tougher for them as well, although Michigan just took care of Purdue. I mean, this conference has been, you know, kind of odd all season long. Purdue's at the top of the league, and Michigan just took them down. Ohio State takes down Wisconsin, was right there at the top of the league as well. So we hate using the word parity and all of that sort of thing, but, I mean, truly, there are no real beasts, I think, in this conference. And despite, you know, the standings being what they are, there aren't any real doormats either. I mean, Rutgers is pretty rough, and they're 2-14 in the league. But you know what I mean? I mean, the difference between first and last isn't that wide of a chasm in the Big Ten.
And that does make for people outside the league to want to call it mediocre, and they're right in many ways. I mean, you know, what Wisconsin lost again yesterday to Michigan State. Iowa beat Maryland over the weekend. You know, when you look at it, you want to say, okay, maybe that'll make next week in Washington, D.C. very interesting. Bob, I still think Purdue's the team to watch when you get to the NCAA tournament. They seem to have the best makeup with their down-low presence and their perimeter shooting. It's a team that possibly could make the longest run in March in the NCAA tournament. But all of a sudden, let's not forget, here comes Michigan State. And even though they've suffered a key injury, losing Aaron Harris, but here's Michigan State now that's all of a sudden seemingly found a little bit of a groove. And when everybody was writing them off and, you know, that brutal non-conference schedule really ate them up this year, all of a sudden they seem to have found a little bit of a stride, as well as Michigan.
Paul Keel's joining us talking Ohio State basketball, really kind of talking all things Big Ten basketball after the Buckeyes win over Purdue and some of the other upsets that he just referenced. Jim Cushion's got another question. Go ahead, Jim.
And you know, Paul, you just kind of referenced it, and I really hadn't asked you much about this. And I'm sure there'll be a more time, of course, for this when we reconvene next week leading up to the Big Ten tournament. But you just mentioned, for those who aren't aware, the Big Ten tournament this year, not in Indy, not in Chicago, it's in D.C., very near to Maryland. Your thoughts on that change? I haven't had a chance to ask you about that yet. You just reminded me.
Yeah, and let's throw out Minnesota, too. They've won seven in a row going into this week. But, yeah, I'm a very big fan of it being in Indianapolis. I really am, just because it's driving distance for more schools. And downtown Indianapolis really treats it special. But this is done, because of an accommodation for Maryland coming in. Next year it's at Madison Square Garden in New York. And it'll be a week earlier. It'll be this week next year. So I don't know. I'm Jim. I'm withholding judgment. It's going to be at the Verizon Center where the Washington Wizards and the Washington Capitals and Georgetown play.
You can judge it if you want, Paul. It stinks.
What's that?
I said you can judge it if you want. Be judgy. I don't care. It stinks. I think it stinks.
Well, you know, D.C.'s got a lot of good things going for it. You know, it's how easy it is to get back and forth and the proximity to hotels.
Yeah.
And really how the city embraces it is what kind of makes it special. I mean, if you guys have ever noticed, St. Louis has the Missouri Valley Tournament every year, and they really make it a big deal in that city. I hate to say I'm not a big fan of it without having gone through it. You know, in a lot of ways, I'm not so sure that for what we do in media purpose, the Big Ten doesn't do a very good job of running a conference tournament. But when they have it in Indianapolis, I think you find more people that really enjoy it there.
Yeah, and you know, maybe it's just the traditionalist in me. I'm not a fan of the fact that Maryland is a part of this thing. I'm not a fan of the fact that Rutgers is a part of this thing. The Big Ten doesn't say Madison Square Garden. You know, and the Garden doesn't say Big Ten. That says Big East from back in the day. And neither does D.C. To me, Indianapolis says Big Ten. It's heart, you know, it's heartland. You know, it's right in the Midwest where most of the schools are surrounding, as you say, almost all of them within driving distance. In fact, all of the originals are in driving distance there of Indianapolis. Maybe it's the traditionalist in me, but I'm with you. I'd like to see it back in Indy.
Well, you know, if they're going to shop it around, I would have preferred to see it maybe go to Detroit. Maybe come here to Columbus. Maybe even try Minneapolis. You know, there's just a lot of the other old guard Big Ten schools you'd like to see have a better opportunity to quote unquote be a host of it. So I'm a grumpy old man just like you when it comes to that, Bob.
Yeah, stick it in Ames, Iowa or something. I mean, anywhere. I don't really. Yeah, it's somewhere where it's traditionally Big Ten. Paul Keels, really enjoy the conversation as always. Hey, were you surprised Gonzaga went down? I thought they were going to finish this thing undefeated. I thought they were going to roll through the tournament and have all the pressure of an undefeated record, that goose egg in the loss column going into the tournament. Is this, you know, one of those cliched, hey, maybe it's good to get that loss out of your system so you see how to bounce back from one?
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I thought maybe somebody might get, if they were going to get caught, it might be in their conference tournament if somebody in the semis or finals had gotten on a roll. But yeah, a little bit surprised. But who knows? Maybe it will be a good thing to, you know, for them to kind of build on moving forward.
Yeah, at the end of the day, like I said, that's that old argument about whether you want to carry that weight of an undefeated season into the tournament, or if it's nice just to lose one and then say we bounced back. That's how we do it, and take all the pressure off. But anyway, great conversation. Paul Keels, thanks so much for the time, my friend. We appreciate it. Have a great call of the last couple of games. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
You got it. There you go. By the way, new number one today in men's basketball after the Gonzaga loss, and then also Villanova lost again. They are now 27-3. Kansas ascends to the top spot in both the USA Today and the AP polls. Kansas with 58 first-place votes in the AP. Villanova still got two, the defending champions. UCLA got three. Gonzaga. I wonder how Mr. Ball feels about that. UCLA only third. He's probably really, really irate right now. You know, Lonzo Ball's father, and I can't remember his first name, my apologies, but Lonzo Ball, the superstar All-American from UCLA, who says his freshman son is better than Steph Curry. And Steph Curry, if he were to replace Steph Curry in the Warriors lineup right now, the Warriors would be just as lethal, if not better. Dude says all three of his kids are going to be one-and-dones at UCLA. He's got a second kid who's LaMelo. How about that for a name, Jim Cushion? LaMelo.
Nice. We're
not like there's any pressure on you, son, but I'm naming you after LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony. You're LaMelo. I don't expect you to be really good at basketball or anything. He's the one who scored 92 points in a game 2 weeks ago. He's probably really, seriously, he's just the mouth that roared. He's like Todd Marinovich.
Yeah.
You know, Marv Marinovich, Todd Marinovich's dad, just putting all of this pressure on his kids to be the greatest things ever. And it's not going to end well. Anyway, his boy, Lonzo, is at UCLA. They're third, then Gonzaga fourth. And if you're wondering where Duke has landed after their struggles this season, they're still down at 17 and most, 17 and 1, 14 in the other. And most observers think that they're still going to be a 4 seed, probably come Selection Sunday in the NCAA.
And a couple things on some of those rankings. First of all, since with Gonzaga's loss, and now we have a new number one, happy to say that courtesy of our friends at Westwood One, we'll have that number one for you a little later tonight. Oklahoma at Kansas, 8:45 pregame time, right here on the ticket. Second thing is, to the Big Ten thing that we were talking with Paul about, did you notice that there's only two teams ranked now? Purdue is at 16, and Wisconsin's at 22. That's it for ranked Big Ten teams.
Well, so now you know what the rest of...
They don't like the conference right now.
That's what Paul just said. You know, said there's probably a lot of people around the country looking at everything we just said being true, that there's not a whole huge gap between first and last in terms of, you know, talent and ability. that people are going to look at that and say that's mediocrity. And maybe they're right. And certainly the rankings would indicate that if they only have two teams ranked in the top 25. Right now. So that's a very good point. All right, that's all the time we've got. Thanks so much for being a part of the show. Drive Time is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, and we'll see you tomorrow afternoon.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.